There's a moment when a person realizes they're not only living their life, but they're performing it. Not performing in the sense of falseness or some sense of deceit, but in the deeper sense that every gesture, every role, every heartbreak and devotion is part of something larger than the individual story. Shakespeare famously wrote the following, "All the world's a stage, and all the men and women are merely players." Yet what is often missed is not the theatrical metaphor, but its spiritual implication. A stage implies intention. A play implies meaning. Roles imply choice, timing, entrance, and exit. And above all, a play implies that no single scene is the whole story. This episode is going to be an invitation to see your life not as some random accumulation of events, but as a sacred drama, one in which the soul enters willingly, forgets its origin, and remembers again through loss, love, and through some forms of illumination. Across cultures, centuries, and spiritual traditions, the same truth appears again and again, that reality is participatory, that consciousness wears form like a costume, and that the divine experiences itself through embodiment. The ancient Greeks called this mimesis, the act of imitation. Plato warned that we forget the source when we mistake the role for the self. The mystics of Christianity, they whispered that God longs to know himself through creation. The Sufis danced until they disappeared into the beloved. These are different languages, but the same knowing. To live as though this is a play is not necessarily to trivialize suffering, but it is to contextualize it. Pain is not meaningless, but it isn't ultimate. Loss is very real, but it's not final. Love isn't accidental. It's the through line. Every spiritual tradition that understands life as a sacred drama begins with amnesia. We enter the stage not remembering who we are. This forgetting, though, it's not a flaw. It's the condition that makes experience possible. In the Platonic tradition, the soul descends from the realm of forms directly into matter and forgets its origin. In the Orphic hymns, the souls drink from the river Lethe, which is the river of forgetfulness, and they do this before incarnation. In Hindu cosmology, Maya, or the illusion, it doesn't deceive maliciously. It enchants, but it enchants so that the play may unfold. If we remembered everything, the story would collapse. There wouldn't be growth, there wouldn't be discovery, there wouldn't be courage. As the mystic Meister Eckhart wrote, God is at home. It is we who have gone out for a walk. The forgetting is what allows the walk. You're not here because you were punished or broken or exiled. You're not here because it's a prison planet. You're here because experience requires limits. And light requires form to know itself as light. This is why the mystics speak of incarnation, not necessarily as a fall, but as a descent of love. In ancient Greek theater, actors wore masks not to hide identity, but to reveal archetype. The mask didn't conceal the truth, it actually clarified it. One mask could express grief more clearly than a bare face ever could. And likewise, the roles that you inhabit, whether it's daughter, mother, lover, exile, healer, failure, student, they're not lies. They are expressions. They're temporary, but they are necessary expressions. And of course, Carl Jung, he would later call these archetypes, right? These universal patterns through which consciousness experiences itself. And we look to the tarot, which maps them, and then myth dramatizes them, and astrology would time them. But none of these roles is the soul itself. If we look to the Bhagavad Gita, it speaks directly to this when Krishna tells Arjuna, standing on the battlefield of his life, that the soul cannot be burned, drowned, or destroyed. Weapons do not cut it. Fire doesn't burn it. The role itself is what dies, but the actor remains. And yet, we have to take the role seriously. This is one of the great paradoxes of spiritual maturity. To play your role fully without believing it's all that you are. When we forget this very thing, suffering becomes unbearable. When we remember it a little bit too soon, life can maybe become bypassed in some way. We have to remember that the wisdom itself lives in this ongoing tension. So no meaningful play is without any form of conflict, and there's no myth that you'll find that's without some form of dissent, and no soul is going to mature without experiencing ruptures or fractures. If you're familiar with the Eleusinian mysteries, they taught the initiate that to suffer is not to be cursed, but it is to be changed. The ancient Greek playwright Aeschylus, he wrote the following, Pathimathos, through suffering, wisdom. So loss, and that experience of loss in this life is what's supposed to initiate us. Betrayal is supposed to strip our illusions. Grief is also supposed to soften our heart. Pain hopefully refines some form of attention. These aren't considered to be punishments, but they are plot devices. This doesn't mean that we seek suffering or that we should romanticize it. It means we don't interpret it as failure. When the mystics speak of the dark night of the soul, they're not describing some kind of mistake. They're describing a passage that's between acts. And even Jesus, in this Christian narrative, he experiences abandonment where he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? The divine actor, he enters the role fully. And that includes experiencing doubt. And this isn't some kind of weakness. This is what it means to be embodied. So if this is a play, love is not going to be a side plot. It's the theme of the play. So Rumi wrote the following, where there is ruin, there is hope for a treasure. Love appears not only in the romantic sense, but as devotion, as grief, as longing, compassion, creativity. It's the force that moves the story forward. If we look at the work of an ancient Jewish mystic and scientist named Chardin, he wrote that we aren't humans having a spiritual experience, but spiritual beings having a human experience. And what is the purpose of that experience? Well, you could say it's to grow in love until love becomes conscious of itself. And this is why love hurts. It stretches the soul beyond its former capacity. It breaks open the illusion of separateness. To love is essentially to risk remembering. Across esoteric traditions, there's a shared understanding that consciousness is light. The Gospel of John opens with the light shines in the darkness and the darkness has not overcome it. The Kabbalists speak of divine light that's shattering vessels so that creation could exist. The Egyptians believed the soul was this luminous intelligence traveling through time. Modern physics echoes this mysticism, but in its own language. Matter isn't solid. It's vibration. This has been established already. It's energy that's being slowed into visibility. So you're not metaphorically light. You are literally luminous. And yet light cannot experience itself without shadow. It's contrast in this life that gives life meaning. Limitation is what gives you the shape in this life. Earth, again, is not this punishment planet. It's not this prison planet. Many of us know that it's a classroom. We could also look at it as a theater. It's this crucible where light learns what it means to love, but really to love under pressure. One of the most radical spiritual ideas is one of the oldest, that God is not separate from creation. So if we look to Christian mysticism in particular, we learn that God desires to be born in the soul. If we look to Sufism, the lover and the beloved are ultimately one. This doesn't mean some form of ego inflation, but it does mean responsibility. If God's experiencing life through us, then how we love matters. How we speak matters. How we choose, it all matters. You're not insignificant and you're not disposable, even if the world tells you that. You are a viewpoint through which the cosmos is becoming conscious. Because remember, the playwright doesn't watch the play from a distance. The playwright actually enters the stage. Spiritual maturity isn't about exiting the play early. It's about remembering who you are while staying in character. So to pay bills, raise children, grieve losses, make art, cook meals, and still know that you are more than this role that you are currently playing. That is what some people might call mastery. If we look to this old Zen proverb, it says, and you are all familiar with this, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. Therefore, nothing changes, but at the same time, everything changes. As we are all well aware, Every play has to end. Every role is going to dissolve. This is not a major tragedy. It's what is necessary. What matters is not how long the role lasted, but how fully it was inhabited. Perhaps you will ask yourself, did you love honestly? Did you tell the truth when it mattered? Did you learn what the pain was trying to teach you? Did you remember, even ever so briefly, that you were more than the mask? The mystics tell us that when the curtain falls, there's not punishment, there's only recognition. You end up remembering who you were all along, and perhaps, maybe just perhaps, you bow, but not to an audience, but to the mystery itself, very grateful for the chance to have even played. Because in the end, love was never the reward. Love was the reason for the entire play. Everyone, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you for listening. As always, please take care of yourselves and have a wonderful week ahead.